Welcome to the GP Forum podcast. The GP Forum podcast is a panel discussion on general paper related issues. I'm your host, Sering Wangyal, and with me each week will be a panel of guests comprising JJC teachers, especially from the English department, and whenever possible, guests from other departments as well. In future, if possible, we hope to include other resource persons from relevant backgrounds and organize live recordings with questions and answer sessions with students. Each podcast will focus on certain general paper topic or issue. For example, this week we'll be looking at the state of sports today. And to discuss this with me is a very distinguished panel of guests, Mr. Chan Kok Heng, Mr. Darren Chan Chi Peng, and Mr. Timothy John Doe. Okay, gentlemen, let's begin our discussion. Mr. Chan, let me begin by asking, is the spirit of sportsmanship still alive today?
Well, probably it still is, but not if you read the news. I mean, Singapore recently, of course, you've heard of the fight between supporters and players and even parents between two schools during the rugby finals. And there were police reports being made and all that. And if I'm not mistaken, the week before that, another rugby player ended up in the hospital, and a judo player also ended up in the hospital. And I guess if they have this spirit of sportsmanship, this sort of thing would happen.
Yes, correct. And about international scene, would any one of you like to comment at this at our national and school level? What about the international scene? Tim, would you like to say something?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, our students in J1 responded to an article by George Orwell about the nature of sport, and he claimed that sport was, I think to use his phrase, mimic warfare. It was war without the shooting. And he was writing that 60 years ago. And if it was true then it's even more true now, because the level of hysteria attached to international sporting occasions appears to me to be utterly ridiculous. It's as if some issue of real national importance was decided by the performance of 11 guys running up and down the field. I think it's unspeakably childish, and I have no time for it at all. But it's there, it's a fact of life. I may disapprove of it, but many millions and millions of people around the world feel passionately about it. Such is the passion, such is the nationalistic fervour, that any ideas of sportsmanship are really lost. Simply a question of winning. And the traditional ideas of sportsmanship, that you should be able to accept a defeat graciously, play by the rules, and acknowledge the virtue of your opponents, seems to me to be largely forgotten.
Very true. In fact, if you've watched big sports event, football especially, over the past few years, we see that there are a lot of incidences of fan violence and such. Do you think that by encouraging such intense fan loyalty, sports is in a way losing its central goal of promoting the spirit of sportsmanship rather than winning? What do you think, Darren?
I think that it's between nations. Probably it won't be. Probably it has manifested itself in an ugly way, right? But I do see sportsmanship in certain professional games and all. Take a look at tennis. People like Nadal, people like Federer, and most of the players actually exhibit quite sportsmanlike behavior. You know, they win. When they win, they are quite gracious about it. They go and kind of console the loser, and even in their speeches, they don't put them down. Okay, they even encourage them. Okay, you are around, you'll probably be around the next few tournaments, and you probably will win some. You know, things like that. I thought that was quite sporting, and of course the losers need to learn a little bit, because even Federer cried. You know, and I've seen people smashing up the rackets and all that, which are not very good examples, but I guess it's human emotions, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point. Like, there are certain sports, in fact, if I note, which seem to promote more violent and competitive behavior than others. I mean, like soccer seem to be constantly in this. Like, for example, in athletics, there's a lot to do with drugs and stuff like that. This seem to be the scenario. Now, when we talk about spirit of sportsmanship and all this, I think there are certain values which we want sports to promote, or what we call desired values. Maybe before we discuss whether these values are promoted or not, can the panel maybe name a few values that we want sports to promote?
We want it to promote dedication, the idea that a person can set himself a goal and work very hard to achieve it, and this we see in sport. We want perseverance. We also want tolerance. We want understanding of the rules and a willingness to abide by them. We want generosity to the losing side. We want to accept decisions that go against us. You know, a referee makes a dubious decision, and that dubious decision should be accepted without protest, it seems to me. The idea of abusing referees, umpires, because they have made a call that you disapprove of is, to me, the very antithesis of sportsmanship. Sportsmanship means abiding by the rules and acknowledging that sometimes the rules will not always be to your advantage.
Or be correct for the
matter. Or be correct.
Because there's human error involved.
There's human error, and
I think that's what adds to the drama, though,
yeah.
Right?
And like in football, like recently they've been saying, shall we introduce what do you call that? Goal line cameras and all this stuff. But at the end, I mean, if you try to make it everything perfect, then a part of the drama would be lost.
Exactly.
Wouldn't be, Mr. Chan.
Well, we'll slow down play, definitely. I mean, if the linesman and the referee have to check the cameras. And I mean, sports, largely, want it to be free-flowing, exciting, and all that.
Now that we have discussed some of these values that we expect sport to promote, do we really see all these values being promoted or not? Or is it being lost in the midst of all this commercialization?
Yeah, we do see it is still alive, especially let's say in a soccer match, when a player is injured, and you know they stop play, and it's actually the player from the other team that stopped the play. They will kick the ball out and then let the other player get attended to, right? Or in tennis, for example, too. If the ball is sometimes the ball is actually out and the referee or the linesman did not spot it, the players themselves actually admitted and said, oh, the ball is out. You know? So I thought those are very good examples of sportsmanship. Nah. And it's like telecast throughout the whole world. People get to see it.
Well, I beg to differ, really. I mean, we look at the millions involved. For the player himself, I mean, the endorsement, you know, the prize money, the salary and all that. The millions involved for the players as well as for the industry. I mean, sports is a whole industry itself of the commercialization of sports. You're talking about, you know, TV rights, broadcasting rights and all that. I mean, if you think about it as such a huge commercial enterprise, winning at all costs is something that is a reality today. So I see people, you know, like Thierry, you know, using his hand to knock in a goal and never admitting it. And Arlen was crying blue murder and nothing was done even by FIFA. I mean, all this points to the fact that...
And people pretending to fall down when they have never
been... Yes, I mean, diving, professional divers, I mean, like Drogba, you know. So I don't think fair play would come in at all if it is winning at all costs.
I think another problem is that because the media are so busy promoting and displaying high-level professional sport, that the values and the attitudes displayed in high-level professional sport have trickled down, so to speak, to the school playing field and to Saturday soccer leagues, and the excessive and ridiculous competitiveness which we expect, even if we don't welcome it, in high-level international and high-level Premier League competition, is now being manifested in school and amateur leagues, with parents rushing onto the pitch and so on and so forth. It is now, I am told, practice that in junior soccer, that's kids of 6, 7, 8, 9 years of age in Britain, in organised leagues, there is now a definite policy not to encourage this degree of competitiveness because kids are trying to behave like professional footballers and parents are trying to behave like professional coaches. And this is disastrous. You know, it destroys the innocence of the whole undertaking. Children think that they should behave like their role models on the television, and this has a disastrous moral effect upon what they're doing.
Now, when we pick up the subject of increasing commercialization of sports, right? Like I did some research and found out that ESPN last year made $7.5 billion. Nike is a $5.6 billion business. Adidas, $2.4 billion. Big football teams like Manchester United are worth $1.8 billion. Real Madrid, $1.3 billion. And with so much money like this involved in sports, and with, for example, companies like our own Singtel paying like $400 million for 3 years of EPL rights. That's about, I don't know, 50 or 60 soccer matches per year. I mean, we are a population of Singapore, 4.9 million, I saw, check this morning, around there. If we are able to pay $400 million, that is about $130 million per year, yeah, just to watch a few football matches. Do you think money plays a lot of role in all this madness?
Well, of course it does. And whether we like it or not, that is the way that the world has developed. It's the globalized world. It's the televised world. It's the world of high-level investment. It's the world where everything is corporatized and everything is commoditized. That is the way the world is. It applies not only to sport, but to virtually every other endeavor. It is vast, and we can't get away from it. We can't stop it. We can't turn the clock back. We just have to put up with these deleterious effects, destructive effects, and try to minimize them as far as possible within our own context, our own families, our own schools, our own friends.
But at some level, don't you think that sportsmen are paid too much? For example, Tiger Woods, between 1996 to 2007, he made $769.5 million. And they said that by 2010, his earnings will pass $1 billion. I mean, that's the GDP of some small countries, or more than that. Right. And David Beckham, I think last year, between last year and this year, he earned, $32 million within 1 year. So isn't that too much money? And with so much money, we often see that players and all this going mad and doing all kinds of crazy things. So do you think that money is a bad influence on sports?
I mean, there will have to be a differentiation between, you know, ordinary jobs and these are high profile kind of career. Like, as long as people are willing to pay that kind of money to people who are really talented in the niche area, why not? I think it only encourages people to choose the kind of job that is that they're really very good at.
Darren's right. We live in a market-orientated world, right? And the market determines this. It's an old GP question, isn't it? Who should be paid more, a nurse
Actually,
or a footballer?
I was getting to that, yeah. Like, a footballer plays a week and earns hundreds
and earns more
or £1,000
than the nurse might earn in a whole career. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So do you think that
in some ways... Choose your career properly.
is the message, choose your career properly, or are we sending a wrong message to society?
I don't know. I mean, it's a matter of supply and demand, as Tim was
exactly
saying. I mean, they're just one Tiger Woods. I mean, you have thousands of millions of nurses. So, I mean, if you really work that hard and has that sort of talent that Tiger Woods has, I think he deserves the money. Not to mention that, you know, just because of Tiger Woods, the whole economy kind of moves forward. I mean, because of Tiger Woods, there must be millions of people employed in golf and the related spin-offs and businesses.
In fact, that's why when he went out due to his recent scandal, people wanted him back. They didn't care what he did in his personal life, because he is a business by himself. He's a walking conglomerate.
Mm.
Right. Since we talked about Tiger Woods, David Beckham, and all these people, not only young people, but even now, our society seem to idealize these characters. And often we see what happens when we put someone up on the pedestal, and then they crash down and all. Then we cry foul and saying that our dreams, expectations, and all were shattered by this person's personal failings. But do you think, first of all, is it good to idolize such sports people? And second, are we imposing our expectations on them by idolizing them ourselves?
I wouldn't use the word idolize. I'd rather put it this way, that should they be role models for the rest of the world, I mean, especially the young people. I remember some time back in an interview, Kobe Bryant was asked, you know, since you're such a successful basketball player, shouldn't you be an inspiration for the black ghetto kids? And he was pretty honest when he said, I'm no role model, I'm just a basketball player. And I think that should be the way. I mean, if Tiger Woods has his sex scandal and all that, that is his private life. And if he's good in golf, doesn't mean he has a high moral, you know, standing. I mean, he need not be a role model for the rest of the world. Probably it's in golf, but nothing else.
Yeah, I don't think people are going to say I am inspired by Tiger Woods to go out and become a serial adulterer. It doesn't work like that. I don't think that sports people are role models when it comes to moral behavior. They may be role models when it comes to persistence, hard work,
certain
talent, right? You can admire a performer because of this extraordinary display of athleticism and talent and courage, even. So we can admire his performance on the track or on the pitch or on the basketball court or wherever and be moved and impressed by it. But what he or she does in private life is, I think, largely irrelevant.
Darren, what do you think?
I agree with the other two panelists. Basically, leave it to the saints, I would say. The rest of us are just mortals and we have our own failings.
But then you see, look, Tiger Woods and many of these people, they come on the television, they promote a lot of things and associate themselves with a lot of good things, right? And then all products even, and then whenever such a fallout occurs, all these sponsors back down. Then isn't it hypocritical on part of the sponsors to back out, because initially they backed them for their sporting qualities, not for personal...
No, they backed them for their sporting qualities and for the publicity which they bring to their particular activity or endeavour or cause.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that Tiger Woods has actually, from his own pocket and his own resources, sponsored an enterprise for disadvantaged children. There is, I believe, a Tiger Woods Foundation. He is able to do this because of the considerable wealth that he has accumulated. And objectively, he will have done some good for those kids that he helped. He may be a deplorable husband, but he is a brilliant performer, and in some aspects of public life, he has done some highly creditable things. So I do think that we should separate people's personal behavior from their professional behavior, if you like.
Let us move to the sports and drugs. Okay, recently there have been many high-profile cases, not only in athletics but even in baseball and others, where sports persons have been found cheating. Like we had this high-profile case of Marion Jones, who was caught and she had to return all her.
I think she confessed.
She was caught, and finally, after denying several times, she confessed. Okay. Previously, we had this big incident. I remember when I was a child, I watched the Olympics, and there's Ben Johnson, Carl Lewis, and then he won, and we were so happy. And by afternoon, we found out that he had cheated and all stuff. So, do you think that whenever such incidents like Lance Armstrong and all this comes up, people really lose faith in sports, or they think that really, like, it seems that when you participate in sports, it turns out whoever is able to cheat and beat the system, he or she may win?
I think the very fact that there are consequences, so it already sends out a very strong signal to people that you shouldn't cheat in sports. So these people have cheated, either they have been pricked by the conscience and they have confessed, or they have been caught up and shamed. So I don't think I think the right signal has been sent.
So the key here is sending the right signal, catching them and punishing them, or
punishing these few black sheep, I would say. Yeah.
Okay. So you would say that it's not a general phenomenon?
Definitely not.
Oh, I think it is a general phenomenon. I think it's very widespread. I think that there are probably sports in which the use of drugs is not publicly acknowledged, but within the profession, it is widely practiced and widely understood. It's just a question of not getting caught. Clever scientists and chemists and biologists keep on thinking up new and more subtle ways of using artificial stimulants.
Yeah, like the Balco incident, like people, the scientists were producing these things.
And well, if we go back in history and look at East Germany, which is a state that hasn't existed since 1989, but East Germany made it state policy to use drugs to enhance their athletes' performance as a political act. And it's possible that some countries still see it as necessary for their political purposes and for their prestige as a nation to ensure that their athletes win, and to ensure this by every means. This includes pharmacology as well as training methods. It's there. It's a fact of life.
An implication is that, I mean, the weaker sporting countries without the technology in terms of, you know, pharmacology, and without the technology in terms even for, say, the sports equipment like swimsuits and all that, they will be at a disadvantage. And more so if they are honest about, you know, playing fair and, you know, playing by the rules. So sporting standards that are achieved through drugs and better technological equipment, the standards are so high that weaker countries have no chance to aspire towards that sort of standards.
Plus the training regimes, like for example, in countries like China, kids are picked up at 3-4 years old and trained until then. Yes. In other countries, you don't have such facilities. I mean, in former like communist countries, they did the same in Russia and all this.
Yeah.
So I think that also gives them an unfair advantage, or, I mean, an advantage if you don't say unfair in some ways.
Yeah.
Right. Moving from there, now since we're talking about state and sports, what about relationship between sports and politics? Increasingly, we see, like recently, there's this big scandal about Indian minister who had interfered in the giving out of franchises, Indian Premier League cricket franchises, and he had allegedly made sure that about $25 million worth of sweat money was paid to his girlfriend or his friend.
That's not really sport and politics. That's sport and corruption, or corrupt politicians.
I mean, because you see, the corrupt politicians, they have a decision-making power to influence these people. I mean, because the BCCI, the Indian Cricket Council, is highly politicized, and whichever party seem to be in power seem to control that body.
But sports and politics has a long history. I mean, all the way back, going back to the boycotts by the, you know, the Americans for the Moscow Olympics and
the famous 1936 Berlin Olympics.
And then, of course, the Russians, you know, retaliated by not going to Atlanta and all that. And more recently, I mean, the terrorists are getting into the act. I mean, the African Soccer Cup.
Yeah.
And
the Munich Olympics.
The Munich 72 Olympics. I mean, it's a long history, really.
But do you think that at the end, if you look at certain sports associations, all the heads have to be appointed through election, not by the government. They insist whenever they see that there's an infringement by political powers, they kick that particular association out of the federation. Do you think that such policies may help in future to stop such interference?
No, not with powerful countries. China will do what it wants to do, and the rest of the world will accept what China does. China's management of its sport is ruthlessly political, just as China's management of its economy and of the internet and of any feature of life is heavily politicized and directed. And if China chooses, for example, to select for party reasons leaders in sports administration, then the rest of the world is hardly going to say, "Oh, I'm sorry, China, you know, you can't play with us because you're not playing according to the rules." It's a question of brute force and size and significance. And sport and politics, as Chan said, have a long history of interrelation.
It's another avenue for the stronger countries, it's an arena for them to struggle power to see who is more dominant. You know.
No, it's not just China, Tim.
No, I know.
You look at the composition of the IOC or any of the sports association, FIFA, you know, or FIDE or whatever. I mean, the European countries and America is overrepresented.
True. I think like in all governing bodies, like the richer countries, more powerful countries, they exercise major power. Agreed upon that. Now, moving on, let's talk about something else. Like, since we're talking about China, recently the previous Olympics was held in China, and I look at some of the data there, and I found out that Montreal Olympics cost $2 billion. Athens Olympics cost $16 billion. Beijing Olympic costs about $40 billion. The Bird's Nest Stadium itself costs $423 million to build. And it is said that the opening ceremony of the Beijing Olympics only cost $100 million. Are we spending too much money on sports?
I think we're spending too much money on the Olympics. I think the Olympics as a movement has become huge and parasitic and uncontrollable and ridiculous. It is a vast and unstoppable commercial and political animal. It has grown much too big and much too important for I think, the well-being of sport. It has been entirely, sport, whatever it is, has been entirely lost in the Olympic process. It's grotesque and ridiculous. And I turn the television off at the beginning of the Olympic Games, but I don't turn it on again until the end.
I mean, at the end of the day, the money comes from taxpayer. I remember when I visited Montreal, I mean, in 1997, after many years after the Olympics, and there were still Olympic taxes. You had to pay money for the because they, I think they ran into loss when they organized the Olympics. So do you think that, is it a wise spending of taxpayers' money?
I think it's, again, tied to politics, right? I mean, it's tied to the image that you want to create. You want to outdo the previous Olympics. You know, you don't lose face. It's a matter of that, I feel.
We move further from that slightly. Let's talk about prize money in games. Small games, I mean, even tennis, I think each prize money ranges from $1 to $2 million, somewhere like that, right? But recently there was this big boxing match between this Filipino guy, Manny Pacquiao, and Joshua Clotty. Okay, I don't know how long the match lasted, but when we talk about boxing matches, it's not more than 1 hour, I don't think so, right? And by the time, it was not a knockout, so maybe around 1 hour plus. And in between that time, the winner, Manny Pacquiao, it is said that he got $12 million. And Joshua Clotty, the guy who lost, he got $1.2 million. So do you think that such prize money a huge amount should be given just because they generate a lot of income? Or is it too much?
We've said it before, haven't we? It's market.
It's market.
It's what the market will take. Who has it described Tiger Woods as a walking conglomerate?
That was me.
That was you. High-level sport is about high-level sums of money. It may or may not be morally desirable, but that is the way it is. And there is absolutely nothing that we can do about it. Indeed, is there anything that we should do about it?
Well, when we carry this discussion on, I was also looking up some facts, and I saw that, for example, when it comes to getting money from endorsements, David Beckham, as I was saying earlier, I got the facts now, between 2007 and 2010, he earned $102 million just from endorsements. Also, although I do remember during this period, he was injured for long periods of time. Right. So now let's talk about general things. Now, if you see sports today, it has become more of a spectacle event. In past, sport is something which people were encouraged to participate. Now, sport is something you sit down on the couch and watch on the television. Do you think that's a bad development?
I think it's not, actually. Of course, it's better if we can just pick ourselves up and exercise, play soccer in the field and all that, right? But then again, we don't have the kind of talents like Beckham and all that. So, it serves as very, very fruitful kind of entertainment for us, you know, to vicariously at least live through our heroes. You know, I think it's basically human nature to want to have an idol. You know, it does fulfill part of it, like, you
know. Well, when you look at the article mentioned by Tim, Judge Orwell article, it's better to fight it out on the soccer pitch rather than to have an actual war. So it'd be something that everybody enjoys, and the whole industry, a lot of people, their jobs depend on it and all that. I don't see why not. I mean, entertainment, business, and something friendly rather than war.
It's been around for so long. The Romans watched gladiators fight in the ring.
So, in some ways, can we say that sports that we idealize, like a sporting event, fair play and all this, is slowly morphing into something slightly different?
No, I would say that, you know, our discussion so far has been on professional sports. Actually, out there, a lot of people play sports for leisure, you know, for friendly competition. And as a school teacher myself, I think we spend a lot of time, you know, coaching students to go for school-level games, national games. And I think at that level, it's very, very different from professional sports.
Yeah, so, I mean, these are two different worlds, right? Like professional sport and the amateur sport, as you can call it. So, but at some level, everybody in amateur level, many people, they would aspire to take it to the professional level, wouldn't it? So how would they bridge these two different worlds and the expectations? As Tim pointed out earlier, that the trickle-down effect is coming from the professional sports towards the amateur sports. So is there any way to push back that phenomenon, or at least minimize the damage?
I think a couple of days ago, there was an article in the papers which argued that at the school's level, we should not outsource our coaching to professional coaches and give it back to the teachers. And if that's the case, I think this so-called trickle-down effect, where everybody wants to outdo the other fellow, you know, just to win at all costs, I think it's a bad direction to move towards. We should go back to enjoying the game, you know, to what's sportsmanship, fair play, and so on.
I agree with that, Mr. Chan here. I mean, if the teachers actually play a bigger role like in the past, it probably mitigate all these kind of bad influences that kind of trickles down.
What do you think, Tim?
I don't like professionalization. I don't like the idea that by throwing money at a school team in terms of employing high-level coaches, you demonstrate the virtue of your school or college. I always feel that any competition between schools, whether it is a sporting competition or chess or computer gaming, you know, any competition between schools should be based upon that school's resources, upon what that school's students and staff, from their own ingenuity or skill or talent or passion or enthusiasm, what they can produce. And that is a demonstration of the school's standing and virtue and values. And employing a professional outsider seems to me entirely opposed to the ethic of sportsmanship and a proper competition between educational institutions. Schools are supposed to be educational institutions and to have an ethical basis. And by professionalizing school sport, you are very much going against the ethical basis of education.
In other words, we may be sending a message that winning is all that counts. Now, to wrap up the discussion, usually, I mean, if you look at the Olympic ideas, it said that it's one of the ways to build peace among nations. But then we see, like, during the 2008 UEFA Cup finals, there was riot. Right. And during the 2007 April 4 match between Roma and Manchester United, they were, between that period, somewhere in Greece also, there were riots between countries. So whenever sports played between two countries, these days it seemed to encourage a lot of riots. So how does it fit into our idea that sport is something which you use to build peace? Even like recent Olympics, Beijing Olympics, it was politicized a lot and there's a lot of unhappiness among nations. So do you think that...
I think that you're naive when you say that sport is conceived as a way of
Well, that's what the Olympic ideal says.
Well, the Olympic ideal is one thing, but the Olympic reality is another. And the Olympic reality is that it's about power, it's about money, it's about prestige, it's about political posturing. As Orwell so correctly put it, it's war minus the shooting.
So shall we resign ourselves to this fate that sports has changed forever, or is there anything positive we can do?
No, you can't. I'm sorry. You can't push the stone back up the hill. It's rolled down the hill.
It is a Sisyphean endeavor.
I still insist there's a dichotomy between professional sports and amateur sports.
I agree.
Let's keep the amateur sport that way.
Okay, and I think by that we can conclude the discussion in that way that, okay, professional sports is moving to a certain direction, and we don't want amateur sports to move in that direction as much as possible. Thank you very much, gentlemen. That was a very fruitful discussion. That's all for today. Please check out our podcast weblog for the next podcast or subscribe to our podcast using iTunes, Zoom, or your RSS feed. We are at http://gpforum.podbean.com. Next week or in the following week, we'll talk about crime in society. If you have any questions related to this topic which you want to ask our panel of guests, you can email it to gpforumsg@gmail.com. I repeat, gpforumsg@gmail.com. All views and opinions expressed during this panel discussion are intended for the benefit of our GP students and to help them develop the ability to look at issues from different perspectives and appreciate the diverse nature of opinions that exist about all these issues and the facts and the fiction behind them. At times, teachers may play the role of a devil's advocate to bring out extreme opinions or different extreme points of view so that our students can appreciate them. And all these opinions shared are totally for academic and informative purposes. We request that all listeners appreciate this podcast for its academic value. And during our conversation, we try our best to get the facts and figures correct and as up-to-date as possible. Thank you very much. Good day.